The nursing home was still in the phone book, and when I called, it turned out that the director was the son of Mother's doctor. That made sense, because her doctor had been one of the owners of the home. When the director heard my name, he was very friendly. We'd gone to the same high school, and our parents had been friends. He told me that his father had retired, but still lived nearby. Unfortunately, the nursing home no longer had any of Mother's records, but he had his father's medical practice records stored in the basement. He'd look to see if Mother's were among them, and if they were, he'd ask his father if I could talk to him. A few days later, after he had called back to say he had found them and gave me his father's number, I sat down at Mother's old walnut desk and spread out the records I had already received from the hospital. I kept a framed photograph of Mother on her old desk. I liked to remember her that way, one leg tucked up beneath her in the red wing chair, a stack of books on the table next to her. I dialed her doctor's number. He greeted me cheerfully. "I really liked your mother and father. They were great people." I remembered him as a decent, tall, shambling man with a cowlick and an air of being perpetually overworked. I told him that I had already gotten and read all of Mother's hospital records and that I was a clinical social worker. I said that I'd been thinking recently about Mother's paranoia, so-called, and wondered what he might remember about her accusation against Frank. After a surprised pause, he said that he had Mother's records open on the desk in front of him, and he read to me the report by the hospital emergency room staff. I listened politely, although I was familiar with the report, and then asked him if he remembered any further details. He didn't. He said he had no memory of the whole incident except what had been written down. Understandable, in a busy professional life and with the events so long ago. He pointed out that a psychiatrist had seen Mother several times and read me that doctor's report. This 62-year-old married female was admitted on November 1, 1973 because of chronic lung disease, oxygen addiction, progressive weight loss, weakness, and mental confusion of 10 days' duration. She exhibited disorientation, visual hallucinations, people, paranoid delusions, and bizarre behavior. She has been on steroids. The patient was seen in bed while receiving nasal oxygen. She was friendly and went through the appropriate amenities. She understood I was a psychiatrist and told of her mother-in-law dominating the household and her resentment, the mother-in-law going to a nursing home where she died 2 years ago. She expressed guilt over this. That was as far as she could pursue the subject. At my suggestion, she told me of her happy marriage and spoke of each of her children. She mentioned their problems in a philosophical vein. When she again stopped, I asked about her emphysema. As she told me of this, she was self-deprecating and suddenly became confused, stated she had gotten her time frame mixed up, asked if she hadn't told me all of this before, and looked at me as if I were someone else. "I know it's rude, but could we continue this later?" I agreed. Also, during the brief interview, she asked for the tissue box, but had to gesture as if she could not find the proper name. But she did repeat my name. She did not offer any paranoid material, nor did she appear to hallucinate. Her mood was generally sad. Her affect was appropriate and moderated well. With the mildly abnormal, diffusely so, EEG, her brainwave recording, history, and interview, I would conclude that this patient suffers from an acute and or chronic brain syndrome of unknown cause. Hypoxia, not enough oxygen, could certainly give such a picture, and steroids could too. The latter usually, in my experience, lead to a more florid or elaborate picture with a lot of primary process-like associations, things like thought disorder. In a woman of 62, Alzheimer's dementia is a possibility, but sudden onset does not favor it. A vascular accident, a stroke, would explain the sudden onset, but not the lack of lateralizing signs. The plan of decreasing the steroids, the use of tranzine and thorazine, a tranquilizer and an antipsychotic, and if she quiets, placement in a nursing home seem appropriate. I don't feel the problem is basically emotional. A neurological opinion might be helpful. I listened quietly, although I had already read this report too. It was on the desk in front of me. I told Mother's old doctor that while I understood his and the psychiatrist's thinking about Mother's condition, I was wondering, since he had been friends with my parents, if they had ever told him about Frank, and I summarized Frank's troubled history. He didn't make any response to what I told him. Simply said he had not known any of it, had thought that Frank had come home to help my parents out. Probably he didn't know what to say, or perhaps he was afraid of being held responsible for not having taken Mother's accusations seriously. I realized that neither he nor the psychiatrist would have had any reason to think Mother's accusation could have been true. He offered to send me copies of his records. Thanking him, I asked if he'd mind sending the originals so I could copy them myself and send them back. I told him that I wanted to be sure I had seen everything that was in her record. There might be something I would consider important that he had not thought to mention. He readily agreed. I had the feeling he might think I was being paranoid. I wondered, just a little, if I might be. During that last year of Mother's life, one nurse had been very important to her, a middle-aged woman whom Mother had referred to as my dearie Mrs. What was her name? Maybe if I could talk to her, she would remember something that could help me. I called the nursing home director again. He thought at once of a Mrs. Egan who had been one of their most valued and longest employees. She had retired, but he had stayed in touch with her and would ask her if she'd be willing to talk with me. He soon called me back with her number. I sat down with a notepad and pencil at Mother's Iowa grandmother's walnut desk, noticing this time the burn mark on it where Mother had laid down a cigarette. I had been rereading a note Mother had written to me that last year. "Darling, your lovely little note was dated October 4th, but I received it just about an hour ago. Is that the fault of the house or the U.S. Postal Service, neither of which is a lot dependabler than the other? Anyhow, thank you for the darling note and for all the others in the past. From now on, I'm going to try to reply, even if it's only a few words, because I think of you all so much, and I might even just write you a sentence of conversation. Don't feel pushed about doing it, but once in a while, put a couple of words on a card, too, please. Much, much love to you, and hugs and love to Matt, too." She had drawn three hearts after her name. I dialed Mrs. Egan's number. She would be in her 80s. It had been over 2 decades since she had cared for Mother. She probably wouldn't even remember her. "Hello," said a soft, elderly voice. I introduced myself, reminded her of Mother's name, and thanked her for her kindness all those years ago. "You were a kind of angel to her," I said. "Well, thank you," she said. "I appreciate that, because right now I'm feeling a little low myself." She explained that she was at a crossroads, having to decide whether she needed to give up her apartment and live with her daughter. "I've been trying to remember," she said. "Was your mother alone in her room, or did she have a roommate?" "She had a roommate," I replied. "I'm trying to figure, looking from the nurse's station, was she to the right or was she to the left?" she asked. "I wish I could remember," I replied, "but I'm not sure." How to describe Mother to her? I said, "She was a very intelligent, very likable woman. At the time she came into the nursing home, she had supposedly become paranoid. She had been on oxygen for about a year." I'm thinking. "I think I remember," she said. There was silence. Then she said, "Now!" And it was as if her memory of Mother suddenly bloomed. "She was by the window, and her roommate's name was Mrs. Brown." "Yes," I said, remembering Mother writing me about little B. Yes, that was it, said Mrs. Egan. Now I remember her. And I do remember she had times when she was very depressed. I would think so, I replied. At the time, my oldest brother, Frank, was living with my parents, and Mother became afraid that he was trying to kill her. Do you remember her ever talking about that? Well, Mrs. Egan said, I know she had some feelings about somebody in that house where you used to live. Did she express some of her fears to you? I asked. Yes, I think she did. What did she tell you? That her husband was not faithful. Oh, I exclaimed. So Mother had known. I felt as if I had been struck by a stone that had been falling toward me all those years. But that was true, I cried. That wasn't paranoid. That was true. I think that's what bothered her more than anything else, said Mrs. Egan. I could not speak for a moment. Then I said, My father and my mother's old friend, you probably met her because she went with my father to see Mother at the nursing home, began having an affair, but they thought Mother was not aware of what was happening. That's the impression I got, said Mrs. Egan. But it was so cruel of them, I think, looking back, I said. Yes, it was, she agreed. But they, in their own way, were consoling each other, and I think they were probably more concerned with each other than they were with her, because they thought there was no hope for her to improve. Remembering that sentence from Mother's medical record, there is no potential for rehabilitation, I said, No, there wasn't any hope for her to improve. No, said Mrs. Egan. Then she added, I do remember her now. She was such a beautiful woman in so many ways. Anything you can tell me would be valuable to me, I said. I can remember one night we must have had some sort of religious talk, said Mrs. Egan, and your mother said, I'm at peace now because there was a figure that came and spoke to me and said, Don't be afraid. Ah, and did you think that was a genuine experience? I asked. I supposed so. She was silent a moment. That's about it, Mrs. Egan said. It seemed time to end the conversation. I thanked her once more, and as I was about to hang up, she said, Only, I waited. Only, your mother always wanted to go back home. She didn't understand why she couldn't go back to her home.